When Jesus saw Nathanael coming toward him, he said, "Here is truly an Israelite in whom there is no deceit." Why did he say it like that? Doesn't that seem like kind of a left-handed compliment? Apologies to left-handed people. I mean, why couldn't he have said, "Oh, here comes Nathanael. He's an honest guy." I mean, that's more of a positive, affirming sort of description than to describe him as what he's not. And not only does he put it in that way, he puts it in terms of all the Israelites. There are a lot of Israelites. Surely, several of them could have been honest people. But somehow, in the way Jesus phrases this, it's almost as though he's saying, all the Israelites are deceitful, except for this guy. What a terrible thing to say about a whole group of people. That seems a little harsh to me. But maybe Jesus was under a fair bit of stress. He's just the first beginning of the Gospel of John, and in that gospel, Jesus is pretty clear about what he has to do in the world, and he hits the ground running. So maybe it's all a bit much. So maybe he's a little stressed. Stress responses sometimes have that kind of effect on us. So we make broad statements over things I think it's like a shielding mechanism that we have. I'm reading a book about the history of London. And now the chapter I'm in takes place in 1665, which of course you knew would happen in London in 1665. Yeah. It was the bubonic plague. And there's a description that the author shares with us from historians and historical records and documents from that time. And they did a lot of the things that we did during COVID. I mean, I guess a plague is a plague. But in this time period, the people were under so much stress about this terrible, very quick disease, that they interacted with others with tremendous suspicion. I mean, in COVID, I was pretty suspicious of everybody too. But they also had a fair bit of contempt as well, as though contracting this disease was somehow a moral problem, a failure of some kind. And so they would lock people in their homes, and they set a guard out front. And if anybody tried to get out of the house, they'd be killed. I mean, it was that kind of degree of contempt and anger for their neighbors and their fellow human beings. Stress does that to people. When we read through the second reading from Revelation in our Revelation book study group, you know this well by now, there's a tremendous amount of stress in that whole book. And the author of the Revelation is under a fair bit of stress himself, and it comes out in the things that he writes. And in this, the very first thing we read is a war broke out. Where? In heaven, of all places, the most peaceful place in all of creation. Now there's a war happening. And the devil is thrown down to earth. Thanks a lot, heaven. We don't have enough problems of our own. And woe to the earth, for the devil has come with great wrath. That's nothing but fear driving that bus. And it gets us all pretty anxious. I just flip through any of your news sources, and there's a whole day full of things to be stressed and fearful about in the world. The world is a hard place. Always, it's always a hard place, but sometimes it feels like that more than others. And how do we respond? Well, sometimes we respond from our own fear of all that stuff going on in the world. Wars and genocide and poverty and disease and terrible things happen to our fellow human beings. And sometimes you just want to put up those shields and just make a broad statement. Oh, it's all terrible, it's all bad. We do that to our detriment. The world is not all bad. Friends, the world is beautiful, and so are all the people in it. But sometimes it's hard to see when we read things like war breaking out in heaven, or when we hear Jesus even putting a big, broad brushstroke over this poor guy Nathanael and all the Israelites. Sometimes our anxiety and our fear get the better of of us. When we read in the first reading from Genesis about Jacob, we see there's a little change happening. As you know, the story of Jacob, he's the guy that stole his brother's blessing, right? And he's kind of conniving. He's not the best role model from the Hebrew text, but this is what we've got, and this is the story, one of the stories that we follow in Genesis. In this moment, Jacob is escaping from his brother, who found out that he stole his blessing and his inheritance, and his brother's mad. His brother wants to kill him, and you know, it's hard to blame him for that. And now Jacob is just about on his way back to confront his brother and get his comeuppance or whatever his brother is going to do to him. And he goes to this place toward Haran, and he lies down on a rock because that's where he is. That's his spiritual state of being, is that he is in a wilderness, and the best thing he can lay his head on is a rock. It's a pretty humbling place to be. And in this most humbling place, he has a dream. And in this dream, he sees the beauty of God. He sees the complexities and the workings of heaven and how it relates to the complexities and working on earth. He sees angels, beautiful, coming and going, doing the job that they're supposed to do here on earth, going back up and collecting their next assignment, and then they come back down. And Jacob gets to witness this thing that people don't often get to see. And then it says, and he declares his ability to see what has always been here in the world with us, and yet is here with us now. He says, surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. Friends, surely the Lord is in this place. In this place. And sometimes we just don't know it. Sometimes we get caught up in the anger and the anxiety and the fear of a time and a place. We lose sight of the fact that God is here, that angels are ascending and descending all the time, and we didn't know it. Because sometimes we respond in fear or in anger at the stresses of the world. Sometimes we respond with anger and fear at ourselves. How many times have you said to yourself, oh, it's so stupid? You're not stupid. You're not. And you're not ugly. And you're not worthless. And you're not unintelligent or uncreative. You are beautiful. You are made in the image of God, who sent all these angels up and down and sends angels up and down into us as well. They come with the message of hope and love. They come with the message that you can put those barriers down. Yes, the world is a hard place. It can be scary and frightening. It can be infuriating and angering. But it is God's creation, and it is good. We who are made in the image of God are the eyes of God and the heart of God and the ears of God to see that God has always been in this place. And the machinations of heaven and the machinations of earth are working together to bring about God's. We spend a lot of time in this particular month, 5 weeks, we call it the season of creation. And in this time, we try to intentionally look at the beauty of the earth. Because sometimes the beauty of a dog or a tree or an orca helps us to help us see the beauty of human beings again. The season of creation that entices us to sniff deeply at the smell of the plants as they begin to change. Maybe the smell of rotting fruit as it's just starting to turn has a sweet smell in the air. And we go, oh yeah, That's good too. The smell of the rain, and the sound. Can you hear the rain landing on the roof of your homes? I can. It's music. It's God's own music that God sends to us to sing us a lullaby at night. In the season of creation, we'll say in what we're using as our confession, we confess how estranged we have become from one another. Sometimes that happens. And we have the capacity to reconcile with one another, to begin to remember to see what has always been there, the image of God in other people. Yes, even in the people that irritate us, even in the people that make us angry and frustrated. When we look for the image of God in others, we are better able to see the image of God in ourselves. We prayed in our collect that God would mercifully eyes would be open to the spiritual reality all around us today. Just like Jacob, we too can say, it's been here all the time, and I didn't know it. Well, friends, now you know. And now you have to try to remember to see it. And we are here to remind one another to see it. Because we will see the stress in one another. We will see the fear in the eyes of one another. We will see the anger as well. And we, who are still able to breathe deeply the blessed air of God and feel the sunshine and hear the rain, we get to say to one another, peace be with you. God is still here. You are still the image of God, and so are they. Do recognize that and let go of those barriers. Put the broad brush down and just be. In the gospel reading and in the second reading from Revelation, in the reading from Genesis, we have a lot of things to ponder. And I always want to point us to the good news. But the good news today, I'd like to draw from a different part of the New Testament. Holding all of the things that we have read, all of the prayers that we will pray, have prayed and are praying and will pray later, holding all of those things together, I wish to remind you of the good news from the letter to the Philippians. From now on, friends, if anything is excellent, if anything is admirable, focus your thoughts on these things. All that is true, all that is holy, all that is just, all that is pure, all that is lovely, and all that is worthy of praise. Practice these things. Whatever you learned, received, heard, or saw in us, the peace of God will be with you. And that is the good news.